for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 316 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, it's the return of Michael Chan Friedman, well-known Star Trek writer and comics writer as well. He's got a new comic called Empty Space that's coming out through Kickstarter, and we've only got a few days left to support it, so be sure to go to Kickstarter.com and look up Empty Space. We talk about the different characters, about how the book will be available, as well as some other things. And of course, I can't talk to Michael without getting his input on Star Trek, so we discuss towards the end Discovery. And Orville pops up along the way as well, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. It's always fun to talk with Michael Chan Friedman, creator of many Star Trek stories and comics and all kinds of good things. And Michael has a brand new Kickstarter going. In fact, it's about to close in a few days. It's for a book called Empty Space. How you doing, Michael?
I'm doing real well. How are you doing?
Good, good. Now, why don't we go ahead and just dive right into Empty Space, which is out on Kickstarter. Talk a little bit about what this book is about.
Well, you know, I've written tons of Star Trek, you know, in the form of books and in the form of comics and short stories and audio, and even contributed to an episode of Star Trek Voyager called Resistance. So my Star Trek chops are out there. You know, it's something I've been steeped in for a long time, and I've always wanted to do something a little darker, a little different. I've described Empty Space as a cross between Star Trek and Lost, which is probably as good a description as any. But really, it's more than that. It's a darker kind of space adventure. And one thing I like when I read comics and books is to be surprised and realize that, gee, you know, I might not be reading what I think I'm reading. And that's the kind of experience I want the reader to have when he or she opens the pages of Empty Space.
Now, I'm going to read a little something from your Kickstarter. It says, I guess this is a description. It says, your name is Robinson Dark. You don't know where you are or how you got there or what happened to the crew you led into space. All you know is you can't feel a thing, not even fear. Then it gets weird. It's kind of like that description. I think that's kind of fun. It's a good thing to do. Now, is Robinson Dark? He looks like is he a person of color?
He is. He is. I didn't want to make him a particular race, but yes, he is a person of color. And I don't know how conscious a choice that was, but I guess I wanted him to be representative of humankind in general rather than any particular race.
Cool. Now, is he a human? Is he from Earth? Are these things we'll find out as we start to read the book?
We will. Is he human? Yes, pretty much. And is he from Earth? Yes, pretty much. Mankind is out there in space as it is, for instance, in Star Trek. But it's different. There are a few dominant races, and humankind is not one of them. And it's only at this point by keeping the balance of power, helping to maintain the balance of power among the other species, that humankind survives. As long as the others are at each other's throats, we can kind of skate by.
So this isn't really Next Generation or Star Trek or any of this stuff. It's interesting you called it Empty Space. Why that name? I'm just curious.
Well, you know, I don't want to give too much away, but you find out in the first issue that he and people like him are called empties. And there, you know, it says in the description that that he doesn't feel any fear or really anything at all. Mm-hmm. And that's true. He's sort of empty of emotion. And the question is how he got that way and what his prospects are and so on. But he's not an unimpaired human being, mm-hmm. not a pure human being. He is something else. And he's on a journey of discovery, as we are. He sort of takes us along as he unpeels layers of the onion to try to get at the truth.
Mm-hmm. So he doesn't know who he is when he first wakes up.
He doesn't. He doesn't know who he is. You know, he knows who he was, and he knows what he was doing last time he was aware, but things have changed considerably, and it's no longer the reality that he's familiar with. So he's got to make adjustments, and not everybody he speaks to or tries to rely on is reliable. So he's kind of unmoored. He's on his own and trying to get to the bottom of who he is and what's going on, and so are we.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
You know, I wanted to use a second person point of view. You know, your name is Robinson Dark. You're this. It's first person. He says, I'm Robinson Dark, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, it says you. Mm-hmm. But in the comic, it's a first person. I do this. I do this. I do this. I remember this. I wonder about this. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's worked well in literature in general, but I think in comics also in particular. One of the things that inspired that was Mark Waid's Flash.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mark and I worked together on a number of Flash projects, mm-hmm. Some of which are listed as rewards in this campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I thought, one of the choices he made that I thought was really brilliant was he would say, my name is Wally West, right? So immediately you're drawn in. You are right there in the roller coaster car with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that first person really, really works well.
Mm-hmm. Very good, very good. Now, of course, you're well known for writing novels as well as comics. Why this one a comic instead of a novel?
You know, it's a good question. Maybe because I'm a little crazy. I don't know. Writing books is a very solitary experience, which is you know, one of the reasons I've collaborated on books occasionally. And the artist who's done my book covers is a guy named Caio Cacau, and he's from Brazil, and he's wonderful. And his first love really is comics. We talked about it, and I realized we needed to do a comic book together. And the comic I wanted to do was something with space adventure, which I really hadn't done in a number of years. And I missed it, and I missed comics, and I wanted to work on the two together, so a space adventure in comic form. And Kaya was all too eager to do this. When we go to the website, you know, it's easy to see how much passion he puts into this.
Mm-hmm.
In the first issue, he did not only the pencils and the inks, but also the colors. And the first thing you see is his painted cover for issue number one.
Mm-hmm.
And then we posted panel art as well. And he's just putting all his passion into this work, and it shines through.
Mm-hmm.
The way we've structured it is we're going to come out with five separate issues. But for the purposes of the Kickstarter, they're collected as a graphic novel.
Hmm. Interesting. So how is that kind of how it's going to hit stores? Are you going to put it out into like comic shops, or is it basically going to be through the Kickstarter folks?
It'll be on Comixology. That's the plan. So five separate issues on Comixology. And then if you want a graphic novel, you can get it here. And I haven't yet made the decision as to whether or not it'll be available in comic stores. So, you know, if you like this type of thing, I would advise jumping on the Kickstarter rewards, because I'm not entirely sure it'll be available as a graphic novel elsewhere.
Hmm, interesting. Because you go to conventions and stuff like that, too. I would imagine if you go someplace, you might have some paper copies with you.
I certainly might.
Okay. We don't want that to spoil people putting stuff on the Kickstarter, though.
Right. But I'll certainly have issues with me of the soft cover edition in any case when I go to conventions. And in fact, one of the underlying reasons to do this was you know, I'm often invited to Comic-Cons of various sizes in various places, and I bring books for the most part. And that's not exactly what that audience is looking for sometimes. So by having a comic book or a graphic novel to show them, you know, it gives me a reason to attend these things in a profitable way.
Well, it makes sense because, you know, because I've gone to sometimes if they're like sci-fi conventions, people are there looking for the sci-fi. They're not really necessarily interested in comics.
Right.
But honestly, if you've got like a sci-fi comic like this one, it seems to me that would appeal to people even there. But also, of course, comic people, there are a lot of comic people who are into sci-fi and stuff. So this is, it's got a really great premise. And I think that people will be really interested no matter which convention you go to on this.
Well, thanks. I think there's some crossover, but I also think, you know, I've looked at the list of backers for Empty Space, and it's the majority are names I haven't seen before in my backer lists. So there are certainly people who are attracted to comic projects who might not be attracted to prose projects, and I guess vice versa.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, it just depends, you know, because I like them both. I enjoy sometimes the Star Trek comics. There are some people who will not buy Star Trek comics because they want it to be on the small screen. And if it's not on the small screen or the big screen, they're just not interested in doing it. But I'm just the opposite. I like the stories no matter what medium they're in. I think that's a great thing to do with that. So I'm glad you're doing this in a comic for a change. I think that'll be great fun.
Yeah, thanks. I want to say something to the reader, whether it's a comic book reader or a science fiction reader or the, you know, someone like you who can make the transition and do both. I really think, this is a theory of mine, I really think that there's a talent for reading these things, for being a receptor to these kinds of stories. I'm sure you know, not everybody in life is into science fiction. Not everybody in life, not only may want to read a comic, but may be able to read a comic. There's a certain kind of literacy in these areas that I think I would call a talent. Mm-hmm. I think the writer kind of meets you maybe three quarters of the way, and then it's up to the reader to provide the rest. Not everybody can take those details, whether they're graphic details or prose details, and construct a world and characters using those details. Mm-hmm. So I really think that a legitimate part of the creative process is in the minds of the readers.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I've often read where people say science fiction requires an imagination, and not everybody has a strong imagination to be able to grasp these concepts and do these kinds of things. So if you can do both, I mean, that's great. I mean, I love superheroes as well as sci-fi. I'm into all that kind of storytelling. So, yeah. And you obviously can write in both areas as well, too, which is really, you know, makes your stuff great fun to read. Because sometimes you're able to bridge those gaps and kind of come in and make stories. You know, you think you're going to go a sci-fi way, and all of a sudden it goes a little superheroic. You know, you do it. And I like that. I like being surprised. Like you talked about surprises and stuff. Because your writing surprises me a lot when I read it, which I always like.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I remember years ago reading a quote from Douglas Adams, you know, who wrote the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy trilogy. And he said a writer's only job is to surprise himself. And I try to do that. I actually try to do that. There was a book I wrote called Kalis about the iconic founder, you might say, of Klingon civilization. And of course, because it was a project, a Star Trek book project, it had to, you know, I had to submit an outline to Paramount and also, you know, as well as to the publisher. Mm-hmm. And so I had that in mind and I was following that pretty faithfully. And then all of a sudden I saw an opportunity to completely turn this thing around. And I said, whoa, that would change everything. And I bounced it off, you know, my editor, and I bounced it off Paramount, and sure enough, they were okay with it. And so it really changed the whole book. You know, it's that idea that you're turning over the dominoes one at a time, and then you get to the end and you flip them all back the other way. And the reader realizes, I wasn't reading what I thought I was reading. Mm-hmm. So it's what you see in The Usual Suspects. Mm-hmm. The end, oh my God, it wasn't what I thought it was. Mm-hmm. And even in Field of Dreams, when the main character realizes that if you build it, he will come. The he is not the he thought it was. Mm-hmm. It's not Jewel, it's Joe Jackson, it's his father. And ease his pain is not about who he thought it was. So that's what I wanted to go for in big ways and small ways in empty space. I want to lead the reader in a particular direction and then show the reader that you weren't reading what you thought you were reading.
Kind of fun because it's going places that we haven't gone before, not to quote Star Trek or trying to allude to that. But I always like when we see things that we haven't done before, when I haven't read this story before. A lot of times I'll start a story and I'll be going like, oh yeah, this is there was a movie that was all about somebody who was going native. The name escapes me right now, but it was they got put into an artificial body and he was on this planet and James Cameron did it and all that stuff. And I remember
Avatar.
I remember watching it and going like, I think I've seen this story like 40 times before. And nothing against Mr. Cameron, but I was just sort of sitting there going like, I've known this. I know how this is going to turn out.
Yeah, he did it well. Mm-hmm. He did it well, but it certainly was something that we've seen many times before. Yep. So I'll tell you what, Robinson Dark in Empty Space is not an Avatar.
Okay, that's good. Well, that's a good start. Mr. Cameron wouldn't be very happy with you if it was.
That's right. Nor would all the other people who've written that kind of story. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you, it's a little nerve-wracking because, you know, you write the script, you give it to your artist, and your artist is only human. He can only go so quickly. And, you know, I want to get this out before someone else comes along and tells us, you know, every time I see a new science fiction premise out there, I have to investigate it and then breathe a sigh of relief. Yeah, okay. It's not Empty Space, thank God.
That's funny because, you know, as much as you've written, and it's a lot, it's interesting to me that you're still worried that somebody's going to find the same thing, going to land in the same spot you have. Because I would imagine by now, after all these years of writing all this good stuff, you would be to the place that, nah, they'll never figure out where I'm going.
No. You know, it's funny. I co-wrote an episode of Star Trek Voyager and called Resistance and with my partner, Kevin Ryan. We wrote the story and we pitched it. I think we pitched it like on a Thursday afternoon or something. And Jeri Taylor, who is the executive producer we spoke with, she said, well, you know, I really like this. And the premise was Janeway plays Dulcinea to a Quezon Don Quixote. Mm-hmm. So she's the hard-nosed realist, and she's living in the illusion of someone else, in this case, a failed rebel from an earlier time. And she said, this is completely different from anything I've heard, and I really love it, and I want to take it to the writing staff, and I'll talk to you tomorrow morning. Mm-hmm. So she calls us the next day, and we said, yeah. And she goes, we're buying it. And we're like, oh my God, you're buying it. That's great. She goes, but I have to tell you something. Just this morning, we heard substantially the same pitch. Oh. We had never heard it before. And then a day after you brought it to us, we heard the same thing. And she goes, frankly, she goes, if you had pitched one day later, we would have had to buy the other one.
Wow.
So that's the kind of paranoia.
Okay.
Kind of environment I'm living in where I live in fear that someone will beat me to the punch.
Well, I haven't beaten you to the punch so far, and you've got a good sense of timing.
Well, actually, they have. You know, a friend and I were developing a kind of a humorous version of Star Trek, and what are we going to call it? The name escapes me right now, but we were developing this, and we stopped when we realized that the Orville, which was substantially the same thing, was in development. Because we said, no, we're never going to get the nod over him. So, you know, Seth MacFarlane. So we ceased and desisted. But, yeah, sometimes you do get beaten to the punch. It's amazing.
Well, you know, I have to say that I don't care for the Orville very much, and so I wish you had done it. It might have been better. I don't care for Seth MacFarlane's sense of humor. And so it also seems to be sort of dry to me, and I always kind of watch this stuff, and I go, well, there are some ways he does stuff that's close to classic Trek, but a lot of the time I'm kind of sitting there going, like, I don't get what this is all about. I mean, if they want to do classic Trek, why didn't they just sign on for classic Trek? But a lot of it's kind of dry to me. I just they only did a few, and it's already coming back, but I kind of wish you had done it instead. I think I enjoyed it more.
You know, you know, we need to make you a television executive. That's the problem. We need to get you in a place where you can make these decisions, because I think you'd be making good ones.
Well, the thing of it is that, see, I understand Seth MacFarlane. I don't want to get too far off into this subject, but I understand that Fox has several shows that Seth MacFarlane already is in charge of and is producing for them. So they're not going to make this guy mad. They're not going to say, oh, no, you can't do that.
Right.
So they're going to let him do his thing, but I got to be honest with you. I kind of wished he had just executive produced and let somebody else do all this stuff, because I don't care. For it, but.
You know what I think? I think he's got some good Trek writers, and I think he's got some good gag writers, but I'm not sure that they merge.
Yeah.
As well as they can. So you've got like jokes and you've got Trek, but I don't know that it knits together as well as it could. Sometimes I like it.
Mm-hmm.
And other times I kind of cringe.
Yep, I cringe a lot. To be honest, I don't care for it very much at all. I have some friends who really adore it, and I just kind of sit there and go, "You like that?" I don't understand it. But anyway, so let's get back to the book here, the comic. Now you're going to release it as a graphic novel, is what you're going to do initially, right?
Really, initially, well, we have we'll be releasing it on Comixology between now and the time that we fulfill the Kickstarter. So it'll be available only as an ebook on probably a bi-monthly basis until we go through all five issues. At that time, it'll only be available, you know, through the Kickstarter, which ends in 9 days.
Yeah, from when we're talking, yeah. The day my understanding, the day that it ends is on the 16th, which is Friday the 16th. So
yes,
this will air before that, and we'll make sure we get the word out about it. See, the thing I'm kind of – so I'm a little puzzled, though. You're going to – it's going to come out – it's not going to come out in individual issues. You said it's going to come out every – I'm a little confused.
Well, okay. Let me – so it'll come out as individual e-issues.
Oh, gotcha.
Comixology between now and November, when we're due to fulfill the graphic novel commitment.
Gotcha.
It's also available as an e-graphic novel through the Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine we'll make it available as an e-graphic novel through Comixology eventually. Mm-hmm. But it's yet to be determined whether it'll ever go into comic store distribution as a graphic novel.
Right.
We're not entirely sure about that yet. I'm not. Say we, because I run a Kickstarter. I want to give the backers who are kind enough to and generous enough to help me out. I want to give them something they can't easily get anywhere else. So either they're going to get something before anyone else, or they're going to get something no one else can get. One of the things that I have in the list of rewards is a hardcover version of the graphic novel, and there are 100 available, and obviously many have been claimed already. They're going to be signed and numbered, and after that, that's it. If I have 30 left at the end of the Kickstarter, I'll sell those at conventions and so on. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to do another print run of the hardcover.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some things that are exclusively available in the Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
Even the softcover graphic novels in the among the rewards, I'll be signing. Mm-hmm. And it's not easy to get a signature on these things unless you go to a convention and you pay some money and stand online and get it that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I want to, you know, I'm really grateful to my backers and I really want to reward them as much as I can.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, you're talking about this being a complete volume. So gosh, I hate to ask this question. Is this going to be a complete story? Are you going to?
Yes.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Well, in the sense that it'll have a sense of closure.
Okay.
So think of it. It's an ongoing story. Mm-hmm. That's the goal. Mm-hmm. Is to make this an ongoing story and go beyond the five issues. Mm-hmm. But the first five issues comprise a story with a sense of closure.
Okay.
So you won't be reading the last page of the graphic novel and going, what? Now what happens? You know, you'll still have questions. You'll still say, gee, I don't really know what's going to happen to that character. I don't know really what's the next adventure going to be and how far will we peel back the onion. But you will have a complete story. You'll have a sense of closure at the end of 5 issues.
Okay, but there'll be a place we can go from there.
Yes, exactly. Hopefully you'll want to know more about Robinson Dark, and he'll certainly want to know more about himself. So just think of an ongoing comic, any ongoing comic, a 5-issue arc, you know, that's collected as a graphic novel, and then it continues to come out, and then sometime later they collect the next 5 or 6 issues. I think that's our long range plan. But the first thing we have to do is we can't look beyond this yet, because we have to make sure that this gets nailed down, and we have to lay the first stone before we can think about more in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, I see the art, and you were talking about how great the art is on the, if you go to Kickstarter page, of course you look up Empty Space, you'll see it there, and make sure you don't put an S. There's empty spaces out there. It's Empty Space,
right?
You want to look at, and the art is really good. I have to say, I really like it. I think that there's a fight sequence.
It's fantastic.
It's just amazing.
Yeah. There's a page of fight sequence. And look at the colors that Caio's rendered there and the line art. It's just, the guy's a really talented artist. And, my only regret is that, when this comes out, I'm sure he'll be getting lots of other offers. And he's a great guy, too. He's he's got a little family, and he's a terrific guy and a professional. And it's such a pleasure to work with him. And he's into this stuff, He's not just into comics, but he's particularly into space adventure. And, he says, can I design that species now? Yeah. Go ahead. Design that species, And he goes, oh, how about this? This is great. How about this? Can it look this way? Can he do that? So he's jazzed about it. He's as jazzed as I am. And he's the kind of collaborator you want. And I have to tell you, I write full script. And scripts are actually available. That's one of the reward levels as well. Copies of the script. And I write full script, which gives me quite a bit of control. But I know I'm not foolish enough to think that I can dictate to a really great artist. I give him some leeway, and inevitably he comes up with something better than what I had in mind.
That's fun.
So I write it down. I think I did a really good job. And then he comes back. He goes, well, how about this? And it's a little different, but it's so much better. So I really enjoy working with him.
That's part of the fun of the comic process in my mind. I think that if you can come up with a script and your imagination goes certain places, but then you give it to a visual thinker, like an artist, and they go places visually that maybe you as a word person hadn't really considered. And I think that's what makes the comic process so much fun. The thing to read is just so great because, you come up with concepts and then the artist can work on that and massage that into some ways that even you are surprised to see. That's a fun thing, I think.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I remember when I was a kid, you'd buy a comic, you'd love the cover, and then you'd open it up, you go, oh man, I can't wait to see the next page. I can't wait to see the next page. Mm-hmm. And that's what I feel when I see Caio's, when he sends me pages, like, oh man, this is great. What's on the next page? I forgot that I wrote it. I'm just digging it.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Just any comic book fan, I'm just digging the art and the story and the fact that I wrote it becomes like forgotten for the moment.
That's funny. You're watching him tell your story.
Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah.
a funny thing. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, when you write prose, in my case, I'm producing books and he's doing the covers. He does the cover. And that's fun too. When I was a kid, there were a lot of different kind of alien versions of Superman who would come to Earth and steal Lois Lane and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And they'd always have Superman-like costumes, but they were always different color schemes. Mm-hmm. And I said, Chia, the one that appealed to me for some reason was the yellow and purple. Mm. So I wrote a book called Cabal and Other Unlikely Invocations of the Muse, a collection of short stories. And one of them was about a superhero, a Superman-like character. And so I had Caio draw me a Superman-like character in yellow and purple.
Hmm.
That was fun. Hmm. But in Empty Space, I get it in every panel. In every panel, I'm getting the action, the posture, the expression of a character that I created who is given sort of an additional dimension of reality through Caio's artwork. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're gonna, it's nothing that you haven't thought of already, but comic books are just so cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're visual. You know, they are. It's almost like, you know, in the days before television and movies were so prevalent, they were like TV shows to people. And, you know, to me, I always look at a comic as a possible, you know, an idea, a way to sell a concept to, say, TV or a movie. Because you've got the visual, you've got the direction going on, you've got all kinds of stuff happening, and you might very well be telling somebody, this is how you could take my story and make it a TV show or make it a movie.
Right, right. Well, I don't have to tell you, producers do look at comic books as a, you know, as potential movies and television shows, and it's easy for them to see the possibilities because for them it's like looking at storyboards.
Mm-hmm. Very good. That's very true. So, and maybe, of course, now that leads to the next question. What if somebody were to approach you and say, you know, this would make a great movie?
Well, you know, Wayne, I'm a purist. Mm-hmm. There's no way I'd let this be a movie. No, of course I'd jump at the chance. And I'm sure Kaio would be happy too. Yeah, of course, if they wanted to make it a movie or maybe more likely a television show, I think that would be we would be very happy with that. And if we did that, you know, I think I'd want to somehow bring in my backers, my Kickstarter backers, in on the excitement. I mean, that would be a wonderful thing. I don't know that it'll happen, but if it were picked up and developed, I think I'd want to give my backers some kind of little additional reward. Because if I have good luck, it's at least in part because of their support.
But what about writing the script? Right, you know, you've written Voyager. And what about writing this as a movie script or say a TV show, a miniseries? You could do that.
I could. You know, I know people in LA who do nothing but write and develop in Hollywood there that you've never heard of because no one outside of a handful of executives has ever read their work. And, you know, they're very, you know, from a financial standpoint, they're very successful. They're getting paid to write and rewrite scripts. And I think that's sad. Mm. I think it's really sad because no one has ever read their stories and no one knows how good they are.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So for me, yeah, would I like this to be a movie? Absolutely. Would I like it to be a TV show? Absolutely. But given the choice of having it developed and never reaching the screen, which is, after all, what happens to the vast majority of projects, we're coming out with a comic that people on, you know, in the context of a Kickstarter, in the context of Comixology, can enjoy. I would much rather the latter. Hmm. You write so people can read, and that's my goal, to build on, you know, in my experience writing 76 books and 200 comics and bring that together, you know, for people's enjoyment.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, again, it's called Empty Space, and the Kickstarter is going to conclude on Friday the 16th at 8:01 p.m. Eastern Time.
Right.
So now's the time to get out there and jump. When we're talking, you're about two-thirds of the way there. You're getting up. Your pledge goal is $10,000, and you've got, of course, stretch goals that we can all help to get to. Once we get to that, we can go past that. So I think it's very, very promising that you're going to have another successful Kickstarter on your hand and do that.
Yeah, I sure hope so. I've done a handful of them. I've done six prior, I think, and they've all funded. But you know, as I mentioned to you on another occasion, you know, past performance is no guarantee of future success. So I am getting that number up to where it needs to be. And you mentioned stretch goals. One of the stretch goals is an 8-page. Story that I developed with Kaio, the same artist, called Taker. It's a superhero concept. And if we get up to a certain point, we'll put those 8 pages in the back of this graphic novel.
Oh, cool.
To see. It's a, if I say so myself, it's a really cool concept. Great job with this, as he does with everything.
Okay, well, before I let you go, I've got to, as a Star Trek guy, I've got to ask. We talked about Orville, and of course, there's another Star Trek show that's out there. And of course, dear old Discovery is out there. And I'm just sort of curious. There are a lot of people who pay to get the CBS thing just to watch it. And I don't know if you're one of those people. At this point, when we're recording, we haven't seen the finale yet. And I don't know, have you been watching this show so far?
I have. And if I had to just make a general comment, I like it. Mm-hmm. I don't like everything about it, and I absolutely love some things about it. Mm-hmm. So it's not exactly the Star Trek I would have written, but there are some amazing stories. The story where she's flashing back, where the protagonist is flashing back to her youth as a child of Sarek, mm-hmm. is amazing. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a great, great episode. And others have been very good. My major criticism is that I would not have done this as a prequel. Mm-hmm. I like the idea of moving forward. Mm-hmm. And so I would have set it after Voyager and not the JJ universe. And that's where I would have put it. And then you don't have to worry about bumping up against continuity here and there. And if you wanted to make a race of species like the Klingons that they've adopted, then you can, and nobody can object to it. Mm-hmm. But having made that choice to be a prequel, to live in that space that's more or less contemporary, I think they've made a lot of good choices, and the production values are great, mm-hmm. but it's not perfect, and you know there are things I would have done differently.
I'm torn about this show. I have to be honest with you. I'm like you, though. In some levels, I really like it, but there are other things when I sit there and I go like, I don't know why they're doing what they're doing, and I don't want to spoil anything, mm-hmm. you know. But I'm really not certain. You know, I like it. I can't say that I love it. You know, I enjoy it. It's interesting. There are some things. And the bad part about us doing a Star Trek show is you got people online who can see things coming a mile away. Mm-hmm. And they'll spoil certain things. And there are a couple things, especially in the second half of the season, that people just blatantly spoiled out there. Well, I think it's going to be... And mm-hmm. I said, well, I don't see how that's going to happen. And then I watched the show and I said, oh my gosh, they were right. And so the problem with that is I always have is it kind of ruins the show for me in that sense. And also having to pay for it is always, yeah. It sticks in my craw. Yeah.
It's not a lot, but I agree. It's something and it would be great if it were free and you know, but it's kind of the tail wagging the dog at this point there. The CBS's objective is to open up this streaming revenue stream, no pun intended, and so that's their goal. Show is successful in and of itself, mm-hmm. but you know, I think it's hard, very very hard to please every Star Trek fan. Mm-hmm. You know, I can tell you from writing 30 some odd Star Trek books and over 100 Star Trek comics and working on that episode, as many fans, you know, as will say, gee, I love what you did. I love what you did there. That's great. I love, you know, a few others will say, yeah, no, that's not what I wanted. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted, I think you should have had a much more military position there instead of a diplomatic one. Or it was a great Data story, but I really like Geordi's stories. Mm-hmm. Okay, there are plenty of those, but, you know, this happened to be a Data story. Mm-hmm. So everybody's got a valid opinion. So it's a difficult thing. I think no matter what choices they would have made, they would have pissed somebody off. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I watch it. I do pay for it. I watch it, and I hope for the best.
Mm-hmm. Well, the big debate right now online is, are people going to continue to pay for the service after the finale? And I see people on both sides of the fence talking about that. And I don't know if I want to wait a year.
Yeah, I don't know if I am. I don't know. I mean, I don't use CBS streaming for anything else. Mm-hmm. So if that's not on, I don't know. I want to support the show, mm-hmm. but I'm not sure I'm going to pay for it if I'm not using it.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Again, it's empty space, and it's Kickstarter, and be sure to get out there and support it. And once again, the conclusion is going to take place on Friday, February 16th at 8:01 p.m. Eastern Time. So be sure to get out there today and sign up and make sure this is a big success. In fact, all those great stretch goals I think are going to be great fun. So, Michael, I think you're doing wonderful stuff as always, so keep it up. And
thank you.
I look forward to seeing Empty Space Part 2
That would be great. That would be great. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. I always enjoy it. And yeah, by all means, guys, go to Kickstarter, look for Empty Space, and find a reward level. The reward started $8. There's a level there for everyone, and there's some stuff that you probably didn't expect to see, and hopefully it'll tickle your fancy.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this week. Please be back next time when I'll be speaking with another great comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.